So that was Gerudo Valley, composed by the masterful Koji Kondo, who's most well known for all of the Mario and Zelda and various other Nintendo properties music. We're talking about one of the most accomplished composers in video game history.
In 1998,
it was. Yes, 98. So the N64 is kind of leaping ahead a bit in terms of years, but still lagging behind in terms of audio technology. So it's quite interesting to hear just the variance in style in that song with the kind of Spanish guitars we were talking about. And yeah, it's simply wonderful. We're actually going to stick with the N64 for a little while and move through another couple of great games. The next game that we're going to be talking about is Banjo-Kazooie, which is one of my all-time favorites. Back when Rare were in prime form, the masterful Grant Kirkhope composing tracks for these games.
Same year,
1998, and this is an interesting game. You can kind of hear a little bit of it in the track that we're going to play, but this was one of those games that pushed the envelope on interactive music, and this was something that Nintendo as a whole stuck with until well into the GameCube era, where they thought it was important that music was a part of the game experience and not just a solitary track that was separated from the game. So within the game of Banjo-Kazooie, as you would move around the world, it would play this theme song, which was the Teddy Bear's Picnic, I think, and it would transition parts of the song to different instrumentation depending on which zone you were walking towards, which is a really nice touch of instrumentation switching to flutes and other things as you approach the pirate area. And if you listen to this, the intro song, it is one consistent theme played across a massive variety of instruments, something that was much easier to do in the era of generated MIDI music than moving to kind of pre-mastered. So let's have a listen. Listening to Zed Games on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM, and that was Banjo-Kazooie, main title by Grant Kirkhope in 1998.
Slightly different to the Doom song we heard earlier.
Slightly different. There's a tonal shift
there, I believe. Slight shift.
So, yeah. Jeff, I think this next game is one that's a little bit special to your heart.
Well, it is. It is, in that it's one I've never finished. It's a Zelda game. It's Majora's Mask. I find this game really hard.
It is very
and,
hard.
And my daughter and I have decided that we are actually going to take this game on together this year and try and actually finish it legit. So I'm looking forward to getting into that. But yes, so, well, you brought up this song, and it's a good point about that you brought this one up, the Clock Town song, because it basically, in the game, you play the same period of time over and over again, and the it's effectively like a time limit or a countdown, and so they have this song that plays in the clock town, and every day that the every time the day changes, the song slightly changes as you head towards the limit of the countdown.
I thought this was an interesting concept, where a normal game you have pieces of music that represent an area and you have to physically travel from point A to point B to get the music to change, and they're kind of linked together. Whereas in this case, it was one of the first games where the concept of time as an extra dimension was actually introduced, and that the same area, the same physical space, could have different music depending on the time in which you inhabited it, which is
clever. Yes. Let's hear the first track then.
Thank you.
so you can kind of hear that all is happy in the clock town there. And so as things progress in the next song, let's just switch over to the next song, right? And we'll see what happens in day two. So immediately it's a little bit faster.
It's quite interesting.
The instrumentation has changed slightly. Same melody though.
Almost puts you a little bit off kilter, you know, just a
little bit. They got rid of the percussion.
Slightly warped.
Okay, and let's see what happens in day three. Okay, so it's faster. And they've added a dissonant counter melody.
It's almost scary now. I remember in the game, if you look up at the sky, there's that ominous feeling.
That's right. Well, because there's the moon is about to impact Earth, and that's your indication of time is how close is the moon to about to smash into the Earth. This is amazing visual.
It's really incredible how Nintendo tried to use everything at their disposal to illustrate this concept of time, which was so new. You know, now you say the concept of day-night cycles and time in games, and you think, oh yeah, every game has this rough concept. But back then, this was one of the first games to really push the envelope on time as a dimension to gameplay and what that means to everything else.
And then having the music react to that as well.
Yeah. They love their reactive music. They love to integrate every element of the game into the core loop.
They did. Okay, so meanwhile, there was also, in the land of video game music, music that was being played in arcades, in the arcade version of games.
I believe the last arcade game we listened to was Rally X, which was...
It was a very early arcade game.
So we're skipping ahead in arcade technology here a little bit.
Yeah,
but pre-CD, still pre-CD.
Yes. This is still, MIDI-based, effectively cartridge-based music. Although... So this game is called Daytona, and I used to play this game heaps. And so you'll notice that it has a very sort of produced kind of sound, very typically Sega-produced music. And there's vocals and stuff in this game. But you can hear that to save memory, they looped parts of the voice and the sound, so you can hear these loop points in the vocals, and it's quite interesting to listen to.
We
the fantastic Daytona Let's Go Away from 1993, I believe.
Yeah,
we're going back a few years to the arcade era there.
Yeah,
they had
some
interesting technology. They weren't quite as limited in some factors as the old consoles. So.
That's true. It's memory. They had lots of RAM.
Great samples and a very memorable game.
Mm.
So we're finally going to do it. We're going to move into the era of CD quality sound. And the game that I have chosen to usher in this grandiose moment is actually called Nights into Dreams. It was a Sega Saturn game. It's very close to my heart personally. It was one of the last games that was a gift from my mother to my brother on his birthday, I believe, if memory serves. If not, I'm sorry, brother. And this was, you know, after he had his job, so he didn't really need people to give him things anymore. But it's still a lovely memory of mine, and it's such an interesting game. This is Sonic Team moving into CD-based video games, the same people who created those lovely games you like in Sonic, and what they thought the future of game music might be. And this is a very cheesy song, but this was Nights into Dreams, 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 the intro song.
I feel so happy right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a good flute solo. You just don't hear that enough.
That song gives me like major Disney vibes.
Yeah.
like remember the Aladdin, the whole new world song?
Yeah, definitely.
A whole new world.
Don't you dare close your eyes.
I love it. I'll karaoke that anytime.
It was around the same period as well. So it might be like an actual like inspiration from.
Yeah, that. I imagine that period is very, very dominant for them. That was an interesting track from the composers Naofumi Hataya, Tomoko Sasaki, and Fumi Kumatani, working on Nights into Dreams in 1996. Some interesting facts about that game, actually, seeing on the, we're continuing on the interactive music path. It was one of the first games using CD audio to have a fully interactive music system of sorts, where as you played through a level, there would be, say, 5 sections to the level, and you'd get graded on each section. And inside each section, there would be Nightopians, creatures that you could interact with. Now, based on how you interact with them, you could change their mood. You could hurt them, and they would get angry. You could be nice to them, they'd be happy, and all these different things. They called it the A-life system, artificial life. And actually, what ended up happening was they would have 4 variants of each piece of music in each zone, leading to thousands of combinations across every level, where you could kind of have variant 1 meets variant 4 meets variant 3, and so on and so forth. And it was quite a complex and convoluted system for changing the way the game would respond to your overall playstyle. It's a fascinating look at early CD-based interactive music.
Yeah, and that was, what,
1996?
1996. Mm. That's interesting.
We're going to have another pick of mine because I'm selfish, and sticking with the 32-bit era, moving over to the PlayStation 1, as that was the Saturn just now, in the year 1999, so a few years later, by Yasunori Mitsuda, we actually have this beautiful track from the soundtrack to Chrono Cross. It's called Time Scar, and I think this is just one of the most well-produced pieces of music of that entire era. To Z Games 102.1 FM on 4ZZZ. I'm Sanatan Mishra, joined by Jeff Van Dyke, and we have stolen Razor's show for the afternoon. That was Time Scar from Chrono Cross, and we're going to be taking you through some more great video game music in the evolution. Jeff, you got another track for us?
Yeah. Still on the PC, there's this awesome game that came out called Quake.
Again, by that little indie studio ID software.
That's right. And I loved the vibe of this game. It was so dark and gritty And they couldn't have made a better choice but to get Trent Reznor involved of Nine Inch Nails. And so this is 1996, and this is the theme song to Quake 1. I love that scream at the end. It's like the sound of the death of old PC audio hardware. And I was glad to see the old hardware go, believe me, because that was awesome. At this time, on the PC, they were switching to fully produced music, CD quality, and then they could involve any composers they wanted, and they weren't limited by the hardware. It just came down to their creativity and production values.
So bringing someone established in the musical world like Trent Reznor in, was that somewhat of a novelty back then in 1996?
I would say so.
It was a very big deal.
Yeah, it gave them a lot of cred, I'd say. Yeah, it was a good match, too.